What you're about to listen to was originally broadcast on 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia. For details, go to the website 98five.com.
Can you tell us who is Destiny Rescue and what does it actually do?
Destiny Rescue, we have been around for 20 years and we exist to rescue children from sex trafficking and exploitation and help them stay free. We literally go into some of the darkest places on the face of the planet, identify where kids are being exploited and get them out of those situations into a place of safety and into a future that, you know, a future that means freedom.
Amazing. How long has this been going? When did it all start?
Yeah, it started 20 years ago. So Tony Kirwan, who is our founder and international president, and Tony still works in the, he's still on the ground. He lives in Thailand and works on the ground on a daily basis. Tony was on a missions trip in Thailand and overheard a conversation from some guys talking about what they could do for $400 US and that they're able to get a young girl and they were basically able to have their way with her. And Tony was just, you know, really, I guess, was angered and outraged from that and then really thought, well, I've got to do something about it. You know, I guess Tony's one of those guys, he's a real hands-on practical guy. He was an electrician here on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland and just, you know, had that real sense of drive to go, I've got to do something about this issue and you know, started our organisation 20 years ago.
Wow, that's incredible.
Mm, yeah.
So can you just sort of paint a picture on who are the type of people that you're actually rescuing?
Yeah, our target are always children or people under the age of 18. It doesn't mean that if we go into an establishment and find a girl or a boy that's being abused that's over the 18, we'll still get them out of the situation if they are in a place that are trapped. But we specifically go into different places around the world to identify where children are being exploited. The youngest rescue we've ever done is from an eight-month-old. Only earlier this year, 2 8-month-old twins we were able to rescue. But most of the girls that we would rescue were aged between 15 and 18. And, you know, generally they're girls that for various reasons, sometimes it's been because poverty has forced them into a situation where they're just desperate to earn money. And we've certainly found that, particularly with COVID. So many girls just desperate to put food on the table, desperate for a meal, and the only way they've got to do that is to sell themselves. But then you've also got girls that, you know, might have fallen in love with someone on Facebook or Instagram. We see this particularly a lot up in Nepal where we have 15 border stations up in Nepal, and we generally find a 15, 16, 17-year-old girl who has had someone on Facebook, you know, essentially fall in love with her. He looks like he's a Bollywood star. And it's probably not his profile picture or anything like that. And they trick them into crossing the border without telling the parents for a promise of love, a promise of a job, a promise of a better tomorrow. They've probably seen the house that he lives in or the apparent house that he lives in. And so they've got this lie that, you know, they've believed to cross the border. We'll also find in some of the other countries we're working in, working with kids that are incredibly disadvantaged that, you know, and just because they've got no other option, end up in a situation which they're powerless to change. They get, you know, trapped into debt bondage, and then there's, you know, abuse that's perpetrated against them. So it builds a real sense of shame into their lives that if they ever go and tell anyone about it, that, you know, their whole family will be shamed, or if they escape, we'll go back and find your parents, and they will also pay the price of what you've been doing. So.
Wow. Paul, what's the last couple of years look like? I mean, I imagine it would have been pretty difficult to even conduct rescues over the last couple of years, particularly with COVID.
Yeah, you'd actually be surprised. So we set out at the beginning of 2021 with a goal of 1,286 rescues. And so far this year, we've rescued 2,174.
Wow.
We have found this year, we will end up being, probably by the end of the year, we will have nearly doubled the number of rescues that we forecast this year. And that's been for a number of reasons. One, we work very closely with law enforcement. And in a lot of the countries that we work in, we, because of our close relationship with the police forces, when the community has been in lockdown, our agents haven't been in lockdown. And so we've actually been able to increase some of our work. Also, our end of financial year appeal back in June was just, we had some incredible people blew us away with their generosity. And it actually meant that we were able to double the number of rescue agents we had, particularly in Southeast Asia. And that has really seen the number of rescues we were able to do in South Asia. I mean, that's just, it's escalated at a huge rate of knot. But, you know, we've certainly seen, even though we've had restrictions and a lot of things have been shut down, our team are just relentless, because we're locked down, it actually means kids are more and more at risk. And there are more and more children in places of exploitation and vulnerability that need to get out of the places that they're in. And so our team have just been, you know, how do we remove the barriers that get put up in front of you, which they're used to doing all the time, because we, you know, that's really what we do as an organization. And how do we get out to find kids that are find themselves in a situation that they're often powerless to change?
Paul, what happens, so you've rescued these particular kids, what happens what happens after they've been rescued?
Good question. It will depend on what country they're in. We've got different, and what types of exploitation they've been involved in. So for a child that's, say, on the Nepal border that has been tricked into crossing the border into another country, generally those kids haven't been abused yet. In the majority of cases, they're probably hours away from being abused. So for those kids, it's about contacting the family, bringing the family in to collect the kids. Generally, the parents have no idea where the kid's gone. They didn't, you know, most of them just said, well, she's just gone to school today. And then so we get them back into a home and do a whole heap of education around forms of trafficking. For a child that's been involved in a, you know, in a brothel and whatnot, we take them through either a community-based aftercare program or a residential aftercare program. And so that will either mean if it's safe to put her back in her home, that's always, well, it's mostly the best place for a child to go, because in that family environment is where they're going to get the most amount of care and respect and love and healing and whatnot. And we'll send social workers out into the villages to be able to work with that girl over a 6 to 12 month period generally. For a child where it's not safe to send them back into their family home and we can't get them into a home of an auntie or an uncle or a grandparent, we do have some residential facilities as well, where we will take them through a process of healing and counselling, and, you know, that's emotional and spiritual, you know, looking at how do we help them generate other skills to learn jobs. So we do a vocational skills training program because, again, if it's a girl that's basically finished school, we want her to go back in, you know, be able to find a way that she can earn income that's not in the sex trade. And then, you know, that also involves, I guess, working with a whole heap of churches and stuff to make sure that there's that holistic opportunity to bring healing to someone.
Amazing. Paul, what countries, I know you've touched on a few, but what countries do you actually work in, and what are the different environments that you see across those countries?
Yeah, officially at the moment, we work in 8 different countries. A couple I can't talk about just for security reasons. We've got a number of countries that are unnamed, but the ones I can talk about, we work in the Philippines, Thailand, Cambodia, Nepal, Uganda, Dominican Republic. I feel like I've just missed one that I haven't to talk about. and then we've got a couple of that we can't talk about just for those security reasons. Sure. And we've also got probably about 4 countries at the moment that we're starting pilot projects in as well. So, you know, really starting to spread our legs in Africa and in Central and South America. And sorry, the second part of your question, can you remind me what that was, please?
Yeah, what are the different environments that you're seeing, obviously, as you go from country to country?
Yeah, like in a country like the Philippines, there's a lot of, you know, historically a lot of bars, karaoke bars, restaurants, you know, parties, more that nightclub scene, massage parlors and whatnot. That's similar in, I guess, Thailand and Cambodia as well. You get a lot of that sort of, you know, you know, I guess for a lot of Aussies, if you've been on holidays to some of those Asian countries, you've potentially been through some of those areas where you've got the girls dancing in bars and there's, you know, karaoke bars or, you know, restaurants and whatnot, where they really attract that Western set of tourists. In Uganda, it's a lot of street prostitution that's happening, particularly up in the you know, parts of Uganda that were really impacted through the war. They're going back a decade or so ago. So a lot of kids that are orphaned or have been abandoned by parents, or parents have died or whatnot, and forced on the streets to, you know, because of poverty driving that. We tend to find in one of the countries working in South Asia, we get a fair amount of child brides, you know, and then kids that literally, because they're desperate for food, and again, COVID's made that a lot worse, where children will go out into the village to be able to just basically beg for food. And if they can get some food by sleeping with someone for, you know, generally only a couple of dollars, they will do that because it puts food on the table for them. So, yeah, I mean, some of the stuff you see, Mike, just, it, you know, just, it breaks your heart, and you look at it and think, man, my kids will never have to make that choice. Yeah. And, you know, for the majority of kids here in Australia, they never would even have to consider having to make the choice that if I'm going to eat today, that's what I'm going to have to do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, our team are just relentless to try and get those kids out of those situations, and then provide, you know, whether it be providing food parcels. We've actually found during COVID, we've started doing a lot more food drops and food parcels into some of these communities, because one, it's helped us build relationship, but it's also helped us meet physical needs about getting food into people's stomachs, so that they're not having to go and find other ways to do that.
Sounds like a good strategy. Paul, what is your personal experience with the work that you do?
You look, back in 2004, I think it was, I became aware of the, you know, the issue of human trafficking, and I guess spent the last, you know, nearly 18 years advocating for the end of the slave trade. You know, we think that we ended the slave trade back in the 1700s, but you know what, back in 1700 with William Wilberforce, it used to cost around about $40,000 to buy a slave. Today, you can buy a slave for about $90. And so the slave trade is actually bigger today than what it ever has been. And back in 2008, I spent a fair bit of time in one of the largest cities in South Asia, looking at the work of a whole of different organizations that were, you know, doing work to get kids out of the sex trade and on that pathway to freedom. And it was one of those things that, yeah, I guess once you've seen it, it's really hard to turn your back on it. And it was one of those things that I just felt for myself, I've got to do something about this issue. And so I guess I've dedicated, you know, probably the last 18 years of my life to try and see what I can do to raise awareness and funds and support, so that, because we have some of the most incredible people you'll ever meet that put themselves on the line day in, day out to provide freedom for other people and to find justice for other people. And it's, you know, I think what drives me, you know, when we've had over 2,000 people find freedom this year, each of those people, like, there's a story attached to that. It's someone's daughter. It's someone's son. And I want to stand on the other side of that rescue. I may not be there physically most of the time. I mean, I have been there a couple of times where I've done some of this work face-to-face, but I want to be on that other side of a rescue of going, I'm going to play my part to be able to do something to make sure that kids have freedom, because you know, there are so many children every single day that get sucked into this underworld, which is all about destroying children's freedom, their vulnerability, and you know, turning it into someone else's gain, someone else's profit. Because the thing for the thing about children is that you can sell a child many, many times, and they can become very profitable for people. You know, if you think about drugs, you can use drugs once. You can fire a bullet once, but a child you can continue to abuse, and you can keep selling them, and so they can actually generate a lot of money for criminal activities and criminal syndicates. In fact, the slavery industry is a $99 billion a year industry. It's the second largest criminal activity in the world, and you know, in organizations like Destiny Rescue, we stand at the forefront to try and put a stop to it and change this for people.
Pretty difficult. It's pretty confronting, I must admit, even just talking and listening to you. It's pretty confronting and almost hard to believe in some ways that this is, it's at the volume that it is, that you're across so many different countries. Why should people support the work you are doing, do you think?
I'm like, look, I think I could answer this question, I guess, in a couple of different ways. One, as a Christian, I think we're called to do something about injustice, but I just think as humanity, as people, as you know, as decent people, there are people that are being taken advantage of. And yes, it's a difficult subject to deal with, but I guess where I spend my time focused on is the hope that I see when someone finds freedom. And to see the smile on face, I remember meeting a lady back in 2008 called Anita. And this lady was trafficked at the age of 9. She was working in a garment factory in Nepal, and she was trafficked across a border into a large city and spent the next 15 years working in the sex trade. And I met Anita when she was probably in her late 20s, early 30s, and she'd actually come out of the work. She had been rehabilitated. She'd actually found meaning. She'd found hope. Spiritually, she found salvation, and she found purpose in her life. And I saw this lady, Anita, that was going into bars and brothels and establishments and finding other women and kids and getting them out of there. And it's people like Anita that are like, you know what, I want to empower you as much as possible so you can be out there and bringing hope into a world that needs hope. Mm. You know, I know, you know, even you guys as a radio station, you want to bring hope into a world. Our world needs hope.
Yeah.
And so you can get caught up in the, oh my goodness, this problem is so big, or we can be people that choose to do something about it. And I want to be on that side of history. I want to be on the side of history that goes, you know what? I can't do a lot, but I can do something. And I'm going to start somewhere, and I'm going to rescue a couple of lives. And if we did that, if our whole nation rose to that kind of challenge and went, we can actually make a difference in the lives of kids. If we start changing our own behavior when, you know, when people are going on their holidays to different parts of the world, particularly see it on end of year footy trips or FIFO workers sometimes, or just people going on their holidays and they decide to go and spend time in some of these bars. You've then got, you know, I guess people that can get on different websites and do things on websites to realize that actually sometimes what you're doing is perpetrating the trade of child exploitation. If we can take responsibility for some of our actions, we can really start turning this around for people, and we don't have to live in the fact that, gosh, this is a big issue. But actually, we can start turning this issue around and changing kids' lives for the better and giving them a freedom that they probably never thought they were going to ever have again.
Well, on that, how can people get involved?
Well, look, we're running a Christmas peel at the moment called Bring Her Home. And this Christmas, we really want to invite your listeners to jump on board to help us bring kids home this Christmas. They can simply go to destinyrescue.org. And you can, what I'd love to do is invite people to sign up as one of our rescue partners. Our rescue partners is making a monthly commitment, and, you know, $55 a month helps us work towards rescuing a child. It costs us on average $1,500 a year to rescue a child. $1,500 to rescue a child. And so, you know, we know that a lot of people doing $1,500, you know, they're not able to do that, but everything helps. And if we can keep raising up an army of people to say, we're going to stand together and be on the side of rescue, I'd love to invite people to do that. You can jump on our website, destinyrescue.org, make a one-off donation, become a rescue partner, and really help us do that. Because what we've seen this year, the more money we raise, the more rescues we're able to do. And I know that can sound really transactional in a sense, but it literally is. We've had rescue agents talk to us in the past about, you know, we're ready to do a rescue. We've got intelligence. We know that there's kids in this particular place, but often we just don't have the finances to get to that next place. And so we want to be able to, you know, the more support we get, the more kids we can actually get out of these places. And then we just love being able to tell the stories of freedom. And, you know, I know for us one day, in an eternity to come, we're going to have a whole heap of kids that turn up and say, hey, I was that kid. I was always a kid. You never knew my name, but you helped me get out. You helped me get out of that situation.
So good, Paul. Paul, and just finally, where is the help most needed right now? What's the urgency?
Yeah, look, the urgency for us is we are really conscious that as international borders open up, like it's almost a paradox. As we get excited about international borders reopening and we can reunite with our families across the world or even across the country, we know that with those borders reopening, there's a whole heap of kids that are going to lose that ability to connect with their families because they're going to be sucked into the trade. And so, you know, our biggest need right now is one, to raise awareness so that people are aware that when they go on their holidays, when they travel, you know, and those sort of things that they can do to be aware of what they could be a part of perpetuating, maybe unknowingly. And then secondly, helping us raise enough support so next year we can see 3,000 or 4,000 people rescued. Because our goal is by the end of the decade, by 2030, to rescue 100,000. Wow. We're sitting on just under 8,000 at the moment. We want to be able to rescue 100,000 by the end of the decade and really put a dent in the global sex trade. So that's where the need is for us this Christmas. Mm.
Amazing. Well, Paul, it's been certainly an insight for myself. Again, as I said earlier, a bit very hard for us to understand in our comfortable Western world that we live in particularly here in Perth. And I'm sure the same would be where you are up there in Queensland. But it's, I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike. Really appreciate it.
For more details on this and other programs, contact 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia, or visit the website 98five.com.